All right. Boker Tov.
Boker
to everyone here. No, Chas Hashem. It's always a good day. Yeah, we're on, right. L'chol ha-mazinim. Too late for that. All right, we read this week the Sedra Vayechi. So, you want a chumash?
No.
Yeah. It's a very interesting area that I want to discuss this morning. So the Torah says, Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shvas Reishana. Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim for 17 years. And Rashi says here, Loma Parsha Zos Stuma. Why is this Parsha closed? What's a closed Parsha? So you find throughout the Torah, you find throughout the Torah that the paragraphs, the parshios, are separated by a number of spaces. Either psucho stuma, psucho mean the line is left blank to the end of that line, and stuma means that they leave a space of nine letters. Every parsha is like that, but even in the sedras, most of the sedras you find a division from one to another. And the chumash, if you see the chumash, will be three pays or three samichs, indicating the nature of the separation. The only two parshas that are not separated at all are Vayigash and Vayechi. It just goes, they're actually a separation in one space. They're not separated at all. So why are they stuma? Why is it closed rather than open? So Rashi says, L'fisha kevan sheniftar Yaakov Avinu, nistamu einayim v'libam shal Yisrael mitzaras ha-shibud, sheschil l'shabdam, that once Yaakov died, the eyes and the hearts of Israel were closed because of the travails of the servitude, so therefore it's a closed parsha. That's what Rashi says, quoting the Gemara. Of course, the question is, what's the connection between one and another? The fact is, having a parsha stuma, a closed parsha, having the eyes and the hearts of Israel closed is not really related at all. So what does it mean, closed versus open? So Rav Avinir comments here that, and it's a general rule we should know, why are there these spaces in the Torah, these divisions, these paragraph breaks? So he quotes the Torah's Konim, which is the Medrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra, that says that when God dictated the Torah to Moshe, he placed these paragraph breaks, it litain revach le Moshe, to give Moshe space, the time, to digest, to contemplate what was being said. Now, it wasn't a straight dictation. God would dictate, Moshe would write, and then depending on the complexity of the area, it would be either stum or psucha. He would have a lot of time to think about it, or a short amount of time to think about it. Here, Moshe is given no time to think about it at all. Why? Because here, nistemu einem v'libam shel Yisrael mitzaras ha-shibud. Here we're talking about suffering of the Jewish people that began with the death of Yaakov Avinu. So Rav Avinir said, what exactly is there to contemplate? What is there to understand? There's nothing that we could possibly analyze about the suffering of the Jewish people that would make any sense to us. So it's stuma. We can't understand the why. We can understand the why of the Galus and the why of the Churban, but the length of it we can't understand. The pogroms, the massacres, the Holocaust, the terror, that we can't understand as well. The obsession that the world has with the Jewish people, with the hatred of the Jewish people, that's just not understandable. It's not comprehensible to any normal person. One of my colleagues just wrote the other day that, I'll give you a guess, in 2014, the UN passed how many anti-Israel resolutions in just the past year? What would you say?
60.
Well, that's high. They don't work that hard. No, the answer is 20. 20 anti-Israel resolutions.
And how many for the murders going on?
Okay, Syria, one. North Korea, one.
Africa?
None. Russia, none. I think they passed a total of maybe three or four resolutions about the rest of the world combined, and 20 about Israel. It's just not understandable. It's not comprehensible to any rational person. So therefore, that's why the Parsha is Stuma. When it comes to discussing, trying to understand Jewish suffering, so what was Moshe to think about? No human being could possibly comprehend it. We can understand somewhat the why, but why it drags on and why it's resurrected, why Jews think that, you know, now it's going to be different, next year will be different. It's not going to be different. It's going to be the same or worse. That's just the way it is. It can never be stopped. All right, one reason is to make sure that we don't assimilate, but nonetheless, from just a broader perspective, with so much going on in the world, you know, Malaysian planes disappearing one after another, you would think that there are other issues that could occupy mankind in the councils of world diplomacy. And the answer is no, there isn't. And that becomes the focus. So that's why it's Parsha Stuma. Dover Acher, Shebikesh Legalos Zakes Levana, V'Nistam Mimeno. So again, the word Nistam is used. Yaakov endeavored to convey to his children when the Kates would come, when the Geula would come. V'Nistam Mimeno. It was closed off from him. So this requires some analysis. And now we just move ahead to the Pasuk, which introduces Yaakov's final peroration to his children. I wanted to throw that word in peroration, by the way.
That is a first.
That okay. is a first. Okay. Peroration?
Peroration.
Yeah, it's like you perorate. You you declare. You speak. Vayikra Yaakov el banov. Yaakov called to his sons. Vayomer, and he said to them, Hey osfu ve'agido lochem. Assemble together, and I'll tell you what will happen to you at the end of days. He kavtsu v'shemu b'nei Yaakov, v'shemu el Yisrael avichem. Gather and listen, sons of Yaakov, and listen to Yisrael, your father. All right. It's very strange if you think of it. We're used to it, so we don't question it, but it's very strange if you think about it. What's strange?
First of all, that he's saying that there are an end of days, that the world's going to end.
End of day. Well, the end of days, yeah, I mean, the end of the, what's strange about it is, as you so astutely pointed out, is that we're just at the beginning of our history. We just came to Egypt. This is Yaakov Avinu still alive. So why would he think to tell them something that's going to happen in such a distant future? Our history is just starting. So Rav Kook explains, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, and I have in front of me the Sichot, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, that all of Jewish history is found in Brejus, all of Jewish history, and everything is found in the stories of the Avos. Mishom ro'eh Evan Yisrael, from there the shepherd, Evan Yisrael. What's Evan? The rock of Israel? Evan is a contraction, Chazal say, of Av Uben, father-son. The father-son relationship is a rock. It's a stone. It is indestructible. In this particular parsha, we go from Yaakov as a person, as a patriarch, to Beis Yaakov, the house of Yaakov, which is a nation. We go from Yisrael, Yaakov's nationalistic name, to Bnei Yisrael, which is our nation. So why Nistatma? Why was Yaakov's attempt to convey to his sons the course of our history, including its end and the time for the end, why was that denied him? Why was that taken away? Nistalka mimenu shechina mimenu, Rashi says, based on the Gemara Pesachim, that the shechina, the divine presence, left him at that moment, and he was left to do something else. Let's see if I find it inside. Rashi says, Bikesh legalos asakeitz, Yaakov endeavored to reveal to them the end of days. V'nistalka mimena shechina, and the shechina departed from him. V'hischil omer dvarim acherim, and he started saying other things. Right, what are the other things? The brachos that he gave to his sons, really an analysis of each of their personalities. But why was it taken away? So Rav Avinier says here, I mean, there are many different ideas one can say, but he writes that the Kates, the end, as we look at it, Yemos HaMashiach demands yearning. It demands expectation. It demands a struggle to make it happen. The desire itself is what brings about the Kates. If we would know when the end of days would come, so no one would think about it until that time.
Does that mean that the end of days?
Mashiach,
mean the
Mashiach.
End of the world?
No, Mashiach.
So when they talk about Mashiach. The end of days,
yes.
The end of the world means.
Achris Hayamim, the end of days, the end in terms of the way the world exists now,
so the
as 6, opposed to
that we learn about that the world is 6,000 years old means that after 6,000 years, for sure there'll be Mashiach.
Don't worry about it. We'll never make it that far.
No, but is that what it means? It doesn't mean that the world will be destroyed.
Oh, so some say yes, but I gave a share of this a few years ago. Many hold it's not so. It's not so. We only have a couple hundred years left, 226 years.
That's a way to look at it. But it's not
right.
The world will end, but that it will be Mashiach.
So no. Mashiach will come before then.
But then the end
before
of days
then.
Means that the world will
end of days means Mashiach. It'll continue in some form. Right.
Cool.
Yeah, the many understand that that the world exists for 6,000 years and a thousand chorav. The chorav doesn't mean destroyed. It means it exists in a different form. That's a different topic altogether. I spoke about this a number of years ago. But no, when we say Achar Siyam, we mean the end of days now as we know it. All right? Followed by Yemos HaMashiach. So it's not referring necessarily to the 6,000 figure. But if we knew when Mashiach was coming, let's say we knew Mashiach was coming 2025, so that would be a violation of Achakel HaBachol Yom Shoat Yavo. We would do nothing in order to prepare ourselves for Geula until right before. So therefore, the desire itself is part of the Kates. The yearning for Mashiach is part of Yemos HaMashiach also. So in fact, he quotes the Frier Dikla Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe's father-in-law, Yosef Yitzhak Schneerson, who said there are three things that are required. One, every Jew has to expect Mashiach to come every day. Two, he must act as if Mashiach is coming today. And three, that if every Jew expected Mashiach to come every day and acted as if Mashiach was coming today, Mashiach would come today. So those are the three things. But all those would be thwarted, frustrated, if we knew the Kates was coming at a certain time. I should add, you know, the two different times for the Kates, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and the Pasuk in Yeshayo, Ani Hashem be'ito achishena, that I am God, be'ito achishena, I will hasten it in its time. Hasten it in its time is, of course, a contradictory statement. If something's in its time, it's not hastened. And if it's hastened, then it's not in its time. So the Gemara says, Zachu achishena, lo zachu be'ito. If they're worthy, then the geula is hastened. If they're not worthy, then it comes in a certain time. So if you want to say by your definition, we can't say this for with any certainty, but obviously, if we're talking about a different type of existence arising after 6,000 years, then it's going to be, that would be be'ito, the final time Mashiach could come. We're not supposed to wait for the final time. We're supposed to do what we can to hasten Mashiach's arrival by living proper lives. So therefore, that's part of achishena, part of hastening the coming of Mashiach. Okay, so what does that have to do with here? Hey, asvu v'agidu lachem. I'll tell you what will happen the end of days. He kavtsu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov. So you have two words of assembly here. One is heyasvu, and the other is he kavtsu. Really, they both mean to gather, but let's say to assemble and to gather as well. So here's the interesting thing. Rav Kook wrote that he kavtsu, to gather, as in Kibbutz Golios, Zeh Mashiach, that is Yemos HaMashiach. When the Jewish people gather, by the way, similar to what happened here, Yaakov gathered all his sons together. They represented then all of Klal Yisrael. In the end of days, when the Jewish people begin gathering again in the land of Israel, that is Yemos HaMashiach. How do we know that's Yemos HaMashiach? So he quotes the Rambam in Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Aleph of Hilchos Malachim, very interesting point. The Rambam says, "V'chomi she'no mamin bo, whoever doesn't believe in Mashiach, o mi she'enu mechakel b'yaso, or does not await his coming, lo b'shanaviim bilvad hu kofer, he's not just denying the other Neviim, ela b'tor uva Moshe Rabbeinu, but he's actually renouncing the Torah itself and Moshe also. Shaharei Torah heidah alav, the Torah itself testified about the coming of Mashiach. Shanemar, where does the Torah testify about the coming of Mashiach? See, quotes the pasuk in Nitzavim, v'shav Hashem elkecha shvuschav rechamecha, v'shav v'kibetzcha mikol amim, that God will return your captivity and have mercy on you, v'shav he'll return v'kibetzcha mikol amim. Where do you find a reference to Mashiach in the pasuk? So Rambam says, this is the reference to Mashiach. See from here, Rav Kook said, kibbutz galia, zeh Mashiach, v'kibetzcha. Kibbutz means Mashiach as well. There it is in the Rambam. So heyosvu and hikavtzu becomes then the secret to bias Mashiach. So the question is, how do we access that secret? Now Rav Kook writes here a very interesting thing. That's also shrouded in mystery. It's a very interesting area, but I'll share it with you nice ladies this morning. It's in the Gemara Chulin, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. It's a very fascinating Gemara. I'll start it and you'll wonder, what in the world are we talking about? So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Yehuda. There are a number of birds that are listed in Parsha Shmini and Parsha Sre'eh that are treif. One of them is the ka'os. So Rav Yehuda said the ka'os is the cook. All right. The cook. What's the cook? All right, so the different mefarshim say different things, what it might be. Art school says it might be a pelican. Racham, another treif bird, zo shrakrak. The racham is a shrakrak. Shrakrak is a pie or the magpie. Shrakrak means it's a bird that whistles. Okay. Lama nikra shmo racham, Rabbi Yochanan said. Why is this bird called the racham? Racham means mercy, rachamim. Kevan sheba racham, ba rachamim la'olam. When the racham arrives, then mercy comes to the world. It means that this bird has a way of anticipating when rain will come. Rain is considered an act of compassion on the part of God. We need it for our sustenance. This bird anticipates when it comes. By the way, a lot of birds like this. You ever see the birds go crazy before there's a thunderstorm? Mm-hmm. They know there's a thunderstorm before the humans do. Om Rabibi Barabaye. Rabibi said, V'hudi Yosef Amidei V'ovid Shrakrak. When do they anticipate that the mercy, so to speak, the rain is coming? When they sit on something and they make that sound, shrakrak, shrakrak, all right? Oh. Sounds like a duck, but it's a whistling sound. Ugamire, we have a tradition, Rabibi said. De Yosef Aara Visharik, if the racham actually sits on the ground, it rarely does. Usually it's flying around. But when it sits on the ground and it starts to shriek, starts to whistle, shrika in Hebrew is a whistle, also Mashiach. It's a sign that Mashiach is going to come. Shenemar, Pasuk in Zechariah, Eshreka lohem v'kabitzeim, ki fidisim. Zechariah said, quoting God, I will whistle for them, meaning us, and I will gather them, v'akabitzeim, because I have redeemed them. Note here again, you have the word akabtzeim, kibbutz. Kibbutz meaning geula. And eshreka lohem, I'll whistle for them. That's this bird, the shrakrak. So this idea, the Gemara questions, because what does it mean when this bird sits on the ground and whistles, Mashiach is coming? Hahu de Yosef be krocha, I'm sorry, be chirava visharak. Once this bird settled in a field, sat down in a field that was plowed, and it began to shriek, all right, which, according to the previous statement, is a sign that Mashiach is going to come, and instead, also golol afsake lamoche, a stone fell on that bird, cracked its skull, and killed it. See, it was shrieking, not did Mashiach not come, but in fact the bird was killed. Omalei, so, Rav Bibi was answered. I'm sorry, Rav Mar Bar Ida answered, "Hahu Bayoda Hava." that bird was a liar. All right? It was shrieking falsely. The bird could not be trusted. Yes. Okay, so what do we make of all this? What do you say? You see, though, that it says...
We've had false messiahs.
The bird was a false harbinger, we could say. Okay. So, the Maharal explains this. The Maharal writes in the Netzach Yisroel, it's Perek Membez, a very beautiful pshat, a far-reaching pshat, the very strange strange Gemara. If we just pass over the Gemara, we'll say, all right, it's a nice story, sad for the bird, sad for us that Mashiach didn't come, but what in fact does it mean? So the Maharal quotes the Gemara there, and he in Chulin Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, and he says that Hamamar Hazehu Kipshuto. The Mamar is exactly what it says, simple pshat. Ubo lefarish b'mamar hazeh, ki le'osid limosa Mashiach, yihye olam echad legamrei. In the future, when Mashiach comes, the world is going to be one. And there are many different ways that the world becomes one, but we know that's the ultimate goal of Yimosa Mashiach, Hashem Echad. Bayom ahu, yashem echad u'shma echad. The world will be one, there will be a complete unity. What is one role of the bird? All right. Well, before the advent of the airplane, the bird really is our only linkage between Shemayim v'aretz, between heaven and earth. That's the bird. The bird is on earth, and the bird flies to the heavens and comes back. So the bird is that linkage. The bird therefore symbolizes, the Maharal says, this sort of connection that exists between the upper world and the lower world. Hence the name Shrakrak. You just take Shrak. What's Shrak? Shin Resh Kuf. What are those? They're the last three letters in the alphabet, aside from the Tuf. The Tuf stands alone. But Shrak, Shin Resh Kuf, are the last three letters. Rearrange those letters. What do they spell? Kesher. Connection. It's this bird that symbolized this type of connection. Of course, there's a connection of Rachmonos, because it's a harbinger of rain as well. But nonetheless, this is the connection that exists. And it has to be these three letters, Shin, Resh, Kuf, because their Maharal explains, Kedarko Bakodesh, you can't always entirely understand what he's saying, but each of the letters reflects. Shin leads into Resh, Resh leads into Kuf, Kuf to Resh, Resh to Shin. That's the Shrak in the Shrak Rak. And again, the Kesher means there's a very powerful chibur. There's a linkage between all of them. He explains that Mipnei ki kasher davar echad misugal ledvar ma, kasher yavo la'olam davar shu misugal elov, hu mitorer el ze bekol. When everything seems to fit together in nature, in the world, it gives forth a sound, all right? There's actually an expression for this in English, which is, everything fits together properly, what do we say? It clicks. What does click mean? You say this about shiduchim, it clicked. Well, nothing actually clicked physically, but a click means there's a connection, a chibur that's intense, that's appropriate, and then that's the sound that's made, a clicking sound, as if everything is working together in harmony. V'hefech zeh, the opposite, is when it does not happen, then the world is atzavim v'domimim, sad and quiet, and there's no connection at all. See, this makes sense that this bird, the racham, the shrakrak, when everything is working perfectly, the rain is coming, it gives forth this sound as a harbinger that what we want to happen is going to happen. So the racham brings rachamim to the world, alright? So too, and what's the sound that it makes? The shrakrak. What's in Hebrew? Shrika, a whistle. How do you whistle? So he says, whistling is kibbutz shvatayim. You can only whistle if you bring your lips together. You bring your lips together. You can demonstrate. you could bring your lips together, and that's the whistling sound that's made. That's also a kibbutz. So this bird, the racham, brings together the upper world and the lower world, and it makes the sound of joy as well. So that's why it's when the upper world and the lower world are together, there's a chibur, it's a sign of good things to happen. And when the bird sits, it means the connection between the upper world and the lower world is permanent, all right? And that is the harbinger of Mashiach, that Asa Mashiach in the language of the Gemara. Doesn't mean that literally the bird has the capacity to do this, but it means what the morale is saying, I think, is that the symbolism is that bird is once the bird is on earth, it means there's no longer a separation between the upper and the lower worlds, and that's Hashem Echad. This is a reference to Mashiach here, Bias HaMashiach. So when this bird is Yosef Ha'arav Sharik, Asa Mashiach. So again, it doesn't mean the bird has the power to bring this about, but it means in context the bird symbolizes this connection that the world is unifying. If the world is unifying, that's a sign that Mashiach is imminent. Eshrek Olohem Va'akabitzem. I'll whistle for them and I'll gather them as well. Yes.
What specifically do we mean by unifying?
Oh, we'll get to that in a moment. Oh, okay. So, what's the problem here? The bird died. The bird was killed. That's the problem. So here, Ahud Yosef Beit Krava Visharak. Aracham settled in a field, right? Starts to whistle. He's clunked on the head with a stone.
It might not mean that every time some bird does that, but it might mean that when...
No, man, this particular bird, not a bird, the racham. The right. Magpie.
No, but I'm saying that when Mashiach is coming, right, the racham probably will do that. There might be false alarms along the way, but when
okay,
that happens,
that could very well. That's
say,
okay.
Oh, the racham did it, and now Mashiach.
Right, there. But then it's not indication. In other words, if
it
we
will
say
be
that
in
one
hindsight.
Second, if we yeah, but in hindsight, you don't need the bird for that. Mashiach will come. If we're saying when the bird shrieks, this particular bird shrieks. In the context of being seated, not birds squawk a lot when they fly. If this bird is seated, which is unnatural for it, and then it shrieks, and Mashiach does not come, so something is afoot.
Like
even worse, also golol afsake lemoche, a stone fell on it and cracked its skull. What you're saying is what Mar Bar of Edai said, Hahu bayada hava, that bird was a liar. All right. So what does
or
that
maybe
mean?
Maybe the name of the person who is the shrieker will be...
Not the person. Now I'm talking the bird here. The
but
bird, the bird.
Maybe it's a remez to a person that'll
okay.
be named Robin. Or I don't mean...
Robin.
No.
All right, so...
The magpie is also like a lowly bird in the bird hierarchy.
Okay.
That's an interesting idea.
By the way, it's I'm only quoting what they say. We don't have any complete... absolute definitive explanation of what the racham is, what the shrachrach
okay.
is. But here the shrachrach dies, and Mashiach does not come, mm-hmm. and they say, of course not, the bird is a liar. So how is the bird a liar? We're shaking your head.
You don't like the message.
Right. You kill the messenger. And indeed. Okay, so what's the shrachrach? The shrachrach died. Mashiach didn't come, and they dismissed him as a liar. Why? Because there can't be achdus just because a bird says there's achdus. Achdus requires something else. If achdus requires the unification of the Olam Elyon and the Olam Tachton, and it doesn't exist, or it's forced, it's imposed, then it's not going to work. And that distances Mashiach, doesn't bring him closer. This is not the morale anymore, by the way. I thought myself. So what happened to this bird here? Asa golol afsake lemoche. The bird said already the upper world and the lower world are ready for Mashiach. So what came down from the upper world to remind him? It's not so? Yeah, exactly. Stone. Okay. You're jumping the gun. You are imposing your own viewpoint on reality, and it doesn't exist, and that's dangerous. That, in fact, is bados. That's a lie. It's a fabrication. what does bring Mashiach? Is what do the birds, so to speak, miss in the context of this story in the Gemara? It can only come through kibbutz. It can only come through asifa. It has to be a gathering for a higher purpose. When all Jews gather for a higher purpose and are brought together, so then we know, kibbutz Golios, so then we know that Mashiach is imminent. But for there to be a kibbutz that can bring Mashiach, it means that everyone has to sacrifice something. Or maybe said a different way, everyone has to be able to at least see the other's point of view as legitimate. I'm not talking about apikarsis. I'm talking about even the contributions that all Jews make. And the truth is, any Jew who has a Jewish feeling, a Jewish heart, even those who are not necessarily shomer mitzvahs, but they have nationalistic feelings, they're also contributing something to the Jewish people. So here, the bird lied. The bird lied. It was smitten from heaven because it claimed there's achdus when it wasn't. Meaning, the achdus of this particular racham, who met this untimely fate, was the achdus that, for example, I have always advocated. How can there be achdus in the Jewish world? Everyone should agree with me. And then there's achdus. The problem is, another million people feel the exact same way. And that's why there's no achdus. So it can't be forced. But what will happen ba'achris hayamim? Exactly what happened now in the context of the Sedra. What did Yaakov do? Note, Rashi said that nistalkman ha'shechina, the Shechina departed. He couldn't say when the case would be. But he gave them a hint. Gave them two hints, in fact. One is hikavtzu, hey osfu hikavtzu. It requires an assembly, a gathering, a unification of all Jews. And then he said, Rashi says, hischel omed v'machirim, he said other things. Well, the other things completely irrelevant to the notion of the Kates and Achris Hayamim? No, of course not. Because then it's a non sequitur. What Yaakov then conveyed to his children is exactly the secret of the Achris Hayamim, which is what? Yaakov gathered his sons, and he pointed out Reuven b'choriato, Shimon levi achim, Yudah guri, etc. He pointed out the unique qualities of each of them, of each tribe, what each of them had to contribute, and each of them are unique, and no two tribes do the same thing, because if that were so, there'd be no need for the second tribe, just like no two people do the same thing. Because if that were so, there'd be no need for the second person. So everyone has to make a very unique contribution. And this, in fact, is the very idea of Kibbutz Galiot. And of course, we see it in all its glory and all its difficulties unfolding in our day. There's a tremendous Kibbutz Galiot in Israel. Jews from more than 100 countries have already gathered in the land of Israel, speaking well over, I think it's like 150 different languages they speak. Sometimes two people speak to each other in different languages, which is part of the problem. But what that means is that everyone is coming and making a contribution to the body politic of Israel, to the polity, to the furtherance of the Kates. Some do it knowingly and willingly, some do it unknowingly and unwillingly, but nonetheless, in terms of all the tribes, each tribe has what to contribute, notwithstanding the differences. And this is what Yaakov said to his sons. Hey, Asu, you all gather together. He kovtsu v'shemu b'nei Yaakov. Gather and listen, b'nei Yaakov, v'shemu Yisrael avichem. Strange pasuk, by the way. It sounds redundant on the surface. He kovtsu, all right, gather together. V'shemu b'nei Yaakov, listen, sons of Yaakov. V'shemu el Yisrael avichem, listen to Yisrael, your father. What's the difference between v'shemu b'nei Yaakov and v'shemu Yisrael avichem? It's the same thing, basically. No, it's not the same thing. Because the b'nei Yaakov gather together and listen to their father. The point is that they gather together, they unify. Once they're unified, then they can listen to Yisrael Avichem. It's B'nai Yaakov are 12 individual tribes. But when the individual tribes are subject to this kibbutz, they gather together, only then can they listen to Yisrael, their father. what's Yisrael, their father? The Jewish people, not as 12 different sons of Yaakov, but as one nation. That's Yisrael. Yisrael, again, is the nationalistic name of Yaakov Avinu. It's only when there's a kibbutz in our individuality, in all our uniqueness, that type of gathering, then we have the capacity to listen and understand what our national father, Yisrael, wants of us. Kibbutz doesn't mean a loss of individuality. It means rather that we maintain our individual identities, but we use it for the benefit of the klal. And that really is the secret to Yemos HaMashiach. And that is the whole point of Kibbutz Golios. That is not only what hastens Achris HaYomim, but that actually already is Achris HaYomim. And every idea, every definition that Yaakov conveyed to each of his children at this particular time, you are this, you will bring this, Don Gur Aryeh, etc. Just like Moshe did at the end of the Torah. What each tribe has to offer to the Jewish people is different from every other tribe. Now that is a lesson that's not easily learned by Jews. You know, a lot of Jews, I've met them, they wish there would be only maybe 12 or 15 Jews in the world, the true believers who believe exactly like them. It's unhealthy, besides the fact that's not the way God set up Klal Yisrael, but it's an unhealthy thought. And the drive to exclude rather than include is the exact opposite. Look, who is Yaakov telling here? He kavtsu v'shimu b'nekov, gather together. He's telling this to his sons, who for a good part of his life did not get along with each other. And they had different conceptions of what each one was, what each one contributed, who is necessary, indispensable for the Jewish people to survive, who is harmful to the Jewish people's existence. They all have different views, and that's why the whole story unfolded with Yosef and Binyamin and the B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah versus the B'nai Leah and versus B'nai Rachel, etc. Everyone has their own approach, and everyone has their own particular tzara. But Yaakov said, if you want to know what Achris HaYomim is, Hikavtsu, there's a kibbutz. Kibbutz means you're all put together. You're all put together, and again, it's not that you lose your individuality, but you see, I cannot impose my individuality on everyone else. All I could do is take my contribution and give it to the klal so everyone benefits. And in fact, that becomes Yaakov's bracha. So everyone had their own thing, you know, Yehuda's Malchus and Yisachar's Torah. But then the Torah says, Kol Eile Shiftei Yisrael Shnei Maso. These are the tribes of Israel, no longer Bnei Yaakov. V'zos asher diber lohem avihem v'ayvarachosam. And this is what their father spoke to them and blessed them. Ish asher kevir chaso berachosam. Each man, according to his blessing, Yaakov blessed them. Note the change. Ish asher kevir chaso berachosam. Each person's individual blessing, with his blessing, he blessed them. Should be berachoso, blessed him. No. Ish asher kevir chaso berachosam. Each person's individual blessing, that's a blessing for the klal, but only where and when the individual sees it as a bracha for the klal. If he wants to just retain his own talents and use them for himself, then he's isolating himself from everyone else. He's excluding himself from the Jewish people, and in fact, he's limiting the ability of the Jewish people to make its proper contribution in God's world. So kibbutz is really the key to Yemos HaMashiach. So nistalko mimena shechina, Yaakov could not tell us when the geula would happen, but he did tell us what would happen. What would happen? That at the end of days, there'll be kibbutz golios, when you all come together. But Mashiach actually comes when you're all together, and then you realize the objective is not that each tribe tries to convince every other tribe of its of the rightness of its own path, of its own truth, but each tribe uses its own talents in order to benefit the klal. That really is the redemption. That is the geula, that's the Yemos HaMashiach, And that's what Yaakov Avinu was conveying to his children at this most momentous time in their lives. Yes.
So if we look at today, where we see tremendous kibbutz galiot,
yes,
maybe now it's time to do achta, and that should be the focus of every Jew.
Well, I gave you the recipe, but it doesn't seem to be working. No, of course, that's the whole point.
Achtus
means
yes.
You see that
it's
all right. It doesn't remain, but those times of crisis enable us to realize that it is possible. It is possible. Granted, an election campaign is not the best time for achtus. Problem of elections to begin with. It's not the best time for achtus, but nonetheless, you see the possibility exists. And I think people say maybe it's different this time. I happen to agree with that. I think it is a little different at this time, because people got tremendous pride out of the notion that every Jew, except for people who are just whacked out, but you're talking 95-98% of the Jews in Israel, and many the average American Jew as well, was filled with feelings of solidarity for their fellow Jews, for the boys who were murdered, and for the towns in the south and the Merkaz that were suffering in the north. It wasn't a feeling anymore of, this part of the country is safe and this part is not, and I don't feel any type of camaraderie with them. There's much greater camaraderie, a much greater sense of unity. Granted, politics is not the ideal way to foster unity in society, but nonetheless it did exist, and I think people, they got a kick out of it because it was a terrible time, but they enjoyed it on some level. They enjoyed the fact that every Jew was able to strengthen every other Jew. Yes, that's right. But even here.
And impressed by it.
They're impressed by the capability that we have. And I think I mentioned this in the fall. The mere fact that it happened showed all of us that it can happen. So that when we want it to happen in the future, we'll be able to make it happen again. And that itself is a tremendous bracha. So in fact, things that would ordinarily divide us, if at a certain point we just step back and say, yeah, I don't agree with him on that, but nonetheless, he's also part of Klal Yisrael. He's also part of what we're trying to accomplish in the world. I'm reading a book that quoted Chaim Weizmann as saying, more or less, what can I do? These are the Jews I have. All right, this is Klal Yisrael. In all our grandeur and all our problems and all our diversity, this is the Klal Yisrael that we have. This is the Klal Yisrael that God created, that he made his chosen nation. And that's the Klal Yisrael that's going to bring Mashiach as well. Okay, I thank you all very much.